The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's November the 28th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, EPA has set the RFS for 2008. A group of congressmen say biofuels from food crops is not enough. And the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says it's going after the snack food market. We'll have details of these and many more ag stories later in the program. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. Oh yeah, along the way, I'll bring you news from the University of Illinois Beef Cattle Co-Products Conference that's happening right now in Springfield. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat gained 30 cents, a limit move higher at $8.59 for their settlement price. The March contract at 8.81¾, up 30 for the day. July futures 7.28, or rather 7.20, the settlement price up 8 cents for the afternoon. December, let me back that up. My eyes just aren't that good anymore. 7.28 was the settlement price. The previous was 7.20, and they gained 8 cents for the day in the July wheat futures. December futures 3.87¼, up 3¼, and 3¾. The March contract at 4.04½, up 3¾. And the May futures at $4.15, up 4¼. December contract at 4.35, up 5½ cents. January soybean futures $10.96¾, up 5¾. The March futures at $11.13½, up 5¾. And May contract at $11.19¾, up 5½ cents. November soybeans at $10.27½, up 2 for the day. December bean meal futures at $2.92.20, up 2.10. December bean oil 17 lower at $46.13. December live cattle futures $95 even, $1.10 lower. And February futures at $97 and a nickel down 90 cents. Feeder cattle now. November contract 19 higher at $108.66. January futures at $109.57½, $1 lower. December feeder, December lean hogs, that is, at $54.87½, 32½ higher on the afternoon. Outside markets look like this at the hour. Down $3.48 a barrel in the crude oil. January contract, $90.93 the trade. The CRB index at 343.77. That's down 4 even. And the U.S. dollar at 75.153 is down 0.56 for the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,269, just about 310 points higher on the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good Wednesday afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, you would have liked the Beef Cattle Co-Products Conference. There were a lot of high-powered folks in that room this morning, about 150 at the Illinois State Fairgrounds at the U of I Extension building there, and they were really talking up DDGs and their use in cattle production, most of that having to do a lot with the southern part of the state being short of hay crop, but it can't be anything but good, I think, for the ethanol industry in general, for them to take it up and look at those kinds of co-products.
You know, and what a wonderful way to say hello at Christmas time is to give some ribeye steaks, or Wayne Nelson probably gives filet mignon, but, you know, it's a wonderful way to say hello to your friends and family by giving beef.
You absolutely better believe that. That is a really good present when you get one of those in the mail, or you just happen to get that delivered more personally to you. It's a great thing to happen. Tell me about the commodity markets just a bit. I had a fellow from from Georgia, and you'll have to forgive me, I don't remember where he was in Georgia, but had been listening to Commodity Week, and it was very complimentary. I had some other folks that had written in, too, and said, hey, you forgot to ask about the wheat market and why it's rallied over the last week, as opposed to topping out about a week ago and then turning around and going down. So maybe you can take that up first with me.
Remember, it started last week when India bought some wheat, and they, by the way, bought it from Russia, and but still rallied the U.S. Wheat market. And then India is buying more. India is a one of those wonderful success stories in the East of buying, well, I guess in the Western Pacific Rim there, and it's based on the idea their economy is booming, and they want a strategic reserve of wheat. They've got a wonderful wheat crop coming on, but they want a several million metric tons of wheat in a grain reserve. And they're in the process in putting out bids for some more wheat, and then all of a sudden Argentina rumored yesterday was concerned about their winter wheat problem, maybe some winter wheat kill. The weather forecasts are wonderful. We're even getting more rain in the forecast of the U.S. winter wheat growing area in the west. And all of a sudden, you know, wheat went limit up. It was stronger yesterday on some of those rumors and then went limit up today. Generally, it's anticipated to be a five-day event, and we'll know just quickly how much damage and what's going on. Also, the Argentine winter wheat growing areas got some beautiful forecasts of some rain as well. The wheat market is basically nervous. It does know and realize that there's a lot of wheat planted in the world, but it still went limit up. Crude oil down. The general idea was that corn and soybeans and even new crop wheat was basically has a lot of fluff, overvalued a little bit. It was selling off today when crude oil finally decided to go south yesterday and today. But then the market saw some short covering with a lack of follow-through selling today. So wheat helped stabilize corn, soybeans, and other commodities at the Chicago Board of Trade.
I guess I want to stay with the wheat market just a bit because when we discussed the nearbys gaining 30 cents, they were up the limit. But the deferred contract in July for new crop only managed an 8 cent gain on the day and really only a 9 cent hike overall. It went to 729, but it settled at 728 for 8 cent gain. Does it point to a simple fact that most of the wheat in the world is grown in the northern hemisphere, and while there are supplies that are coming on in the southern hemisphere, it won't be until July that we really are until late next spring that we start to get some of this into the marketplace?
We know that there is some truth to that, and of course we do know that the Australian wheat crop is definitely stabilized, and we have a big crop out of Argentina and Brazil to work with. Dan Bassi in Geneva, Switzerland, said, you know, that we're going to have a 650 million metric ton crop. I think that's about 42 million metric tons larger than a year ago. So we're going to have a lot of wheat. We are decoupling and trading differently old crop wheat and new crop wheat, and it should be different. Russia's planted a lot of wheat. The European Economic Community's planted a lot of wheat. There's a lot of soft wheat planted here and a lot of hard red winter wheat. And I'm also going to say a lot of spring wheat will be planted when the time comes. There's been a lot of fertilizer put on. Farmers welcome these higher prices, and they're really growing for the marketplace. So I think that once we get this old crop supply taken care of, and as we go into the summer time frame, you know, I think Dan is talking about a $5 bill for new July wheat at some point in time. So there is a lot of potential price swings in that new crop wheat. It's being talked about around the world, and it's we need the new crop production to come along and basically grow it in pretty good shape. People are also concerned about crop conditions in the U.S. dropping off a little bit, but the private weather guys are talking about a rain event towards the weekend and possibly on into the early part of December.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, maybe within the last month, you were talking a bit about the marketplace for corn trading off. That really hasn't happened yet. Have you changed your mind about that at all?
Well, you know, good question. When we did see and hear Saudi Arabia basically say we're going to increase oil production, it took a loaded pistol off the table, in my opinion. Also, when the Abu Dhabi Central Finance Group came in and basically bought 5% of Citibank and charging them a hefty 11% interest on some additional money, which is a good way to tell a bank that we think you're on shaky grounds. It basically stabilized the Citibank and took another, at least a bullet out of the loaded gun. So the stock market today on ideas that we will see another quarter of a point interest rate cut, crude oil backing off, Citibank basically getting additional credit at a price, all were major factors today in at least having the stock market higher. And basically, one of the things on commodity week that was a common denominator this weekend was that if you're worried about a price inflation based on oil, you market your grain in an orderly fashion. If that worry's been taken off the table, $4-plus corn is a good enough price at 200 bushels for anybody, and I think that that also is going to encourage orderly cash marketing over the next 90 to 120 days.
With that, we'll let you go. Thanks much, Paul.
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In today's agricultural news, EPA has set the 2008 RFS standard. The Environmental Protection Agency has set a renewable fuel standard for 2008. The agency wants 5.4 billion gallons of renewable fuels blended into transportation gasoline by November the 30th of next year. That would mean 4.55% of the fuels pumped would be from renewable sources. The standard for 2007 was 4.02%. equating to roughly 4.7 billion gallons. The overall volume target increases every year, reaching 7.5 billion gallons in the year 2012. Well, congressional delegation wants RFS assurances. A delegation of 46 members of Congress have signed a letter urging House and Senate leaders to craft a renewable fuel standard that encourages development of biofuels from non-food crops. The letter emphasizes new and unforeseeable challenges. The letter notes that rising crop prices have contributed to higher consumer prices for staples like eggs, dairy, and meat, and the members of Congress are concerned a major increase in ethanol production from food crops such as corn could hurt those Americans in greatest need of assistance. The letter states, "We believe this legislation can advance our nation's energy independence without compounding our hunger and environmental challenges. In particular, we urge you make the development of biofuels from crop waste, wood waste, perennial grasses, and other non-food crops the centerpiece of a new expanded RFS. They also want consideration given to potential impact of domestic and international food prices, feed prices, and environmental health." Well, the WTO agreement is out of reach. That, according to the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, he says the long-awaited world trade deal will remain out of reach until developing countries can agree to open their markets to more U.S. farm goods. Bob Stallman told members of the Virginia Farm Bureau Federation that talks are stuck because many developing countries want the United States to reduce its farm subsidies without cutting their own tariffs in return. And finally, the beef checkoff dollars have been used to develop a new line of handheld beef snacks. Ken Stilo, chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, says the need for such products became obvious to him when he visited with a group of young moms.
One mother said, "You know, if you're going to sell me beef for my child, it needs to be something that I can go through a drive-in, get it out at the drive-in window, hand it over the back seat of my SUV to my child in a protective seat, and they're going to want it, not get it all over themselves and not drop it on the floor. It seems like that a lot of children develop their eating habits in that manner.
The new products the Beef Innovations Group is introducing include a beef sandwich, steak and egg breakfast bites, breakfast pancake flip, and a standing beef sandwich. Stylo says consumers can also watch for a cheeseburger on a stick in 2008. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. I'm Todd Gleason. Just back from Springfield today, where the U of I Extension sponsored the Beef Cattle Co-Products Conference, which is still in full swing. I have no doubt, given the number of reporters that were there this morning, you'll be reading and hearing a lot about that conference in the coming weeks. We'll start our coverage today. Paul Walker is an animal scientist at Illinois State University. This morning, he took up the mineral issues related to feeding co-products like DDGs and corn gluten to beef cattle. I asked him to summarize his presentation.
My discussion today is co-products and mineral concerns. And as we are looking and investigating using higher inclusion rates of co-products, in particular, we're talking about corn gluten and distiller's grain, less so about soy hulls in this instance. And as we include more co-products, our concerns are really four primary minerals, and those are calcium, phosphorus, sulfur, and perhaps sodium. And as we know, corn has always been low in calcium, and it's fairly high, relatively speaking, in phosphorus. So we've always had this concern about balancing for calcium and phosphorus. That problem is exacerbated when we go to using distillers' grains or co-products. Co-products are very low in calcium and exceedingly high in phosphorus. And more recently, we've had a real concern about the sulfur content in distillers' grains. In fact, this fall, sulfur contents in many of the distillers' grains are running at levels twice of what they were a year ago. And part of that reason may be the market for one of the co-products coming off of ethanol production, condensed distiller solubles, has decreased. And so the plants are putting more of the CDS, or condensed distiller solubles, back into the distiller's grain. The CDS is exceedingly high in sulfur relative to what the distiller's grains were, so it bumps up the sulfur content. The sulfur content is problematic to us because two things can happen. At moderately high levels of sulfur, the bacteria that produce vitamin B1 in the rumen are decreased, and so the steers may become vitamin B1 deficient, or thiamine. And we can handle that by adding thiamine in the diet. At higher levels of sulfur inclusion, we run into sulfur toxicity problems. And sulfur toxicity problems results in what we call, lay people call, brainers. Those are cattle that have a nervous dysfunction, and they'll push against a fence post. They'll become lethargic and then can die. And usually the way in which we treat that sulfur toxicity is to remove the sulfur from the diet. And usually they'll come back around. Well, as we now are promoting higher levels of distiller's grain inclusion, historically we were around 25% of the diet dry matter, and now we're suggesting we can feed 40, maybe 45, maybe 50% of the diet dry matter. Now then, with higher sulfur composition in the distiller's grain, we're running into sulfur toxicity problems. And so the limiting factor may not be energy, may not be protein, may not be cost. It may be sulfur content. Not sure why, what other reasons there are and why the sulfur content may be higher. A lot of the other information about how they manufacture the corn to make ethanol is proprietary, but they have to use sulfur dioxide and or sulfuric acid to balance the pH when they're doing ethanol production. And maybe those levels have been inching up over time also. And so we have a problem in the industry that somehow the nutrition profession and the ethanol manufacturers need to address together to keep producers from having train wrecks. And there have been a couple wrecks out there in the industry this fall, throwing cattle off feed, producers losing cattle at the high inclusion rates of distillers grain. So that's one of the issues I'll discuss today. Other issue is keep the balance of calcium and phosphorus correct. And so if you add distillers grains, we're going to have to add a source of calcium, limestone or calcium carbonate. We need to keep that in balance. We're going to emphasize the need to do what we call TMR formulation or total mix ration, which means we need to have a mixer. We need to be able to weigh ingredients. The old farmer feeder method of top dressing is not nearly as efficient for distillers grains that it would be for traditional feedstuffs.
It was Illinois State University animal scientist Paul Walker. We spoke with him this morning in Springfield at the Illinois Beef Cattle Co-Products Conference on the state fairgrounds. There were more than 150 in attendance. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is a Wednesday afternoon. We're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
And good afternoon to you, Todd.
Well, tell me about basis levels in the Terre Haute area.
Well, I just went back and looked. In the last month, we have gained probably about close to 25 or 30 cents improvement in the base. That's a lot in a month, you know, and it continues to get a little better all along, just maybe a penny or two a week, but it's still improving and probably will continue to until we start to get the January rush, and then that could change things.
Boy, that's fairly amazing with the size of the crop we have, and we still managed to gain that much in the basis points over a month's time, and fairly quickly. In any good reasons behind the move, in your opinion?
Several reasons, I suppose. Demand's been good. That's undeniable. You know, our exports are just far surpassing, you know, what the guesses were, and farmers have just kind of locked things up. They're selling forward contracts, but as far as moving cash, they're really not unless they're coring bins or something. But I think it's just got to be demand. It has to be. And it just continues to improve a little bit all the time, so country movement evidently is not picking up the slack.
Yeah, demand, and I guess it means that $4 or $3.80 corn or something like that is where she ought to be, doesn't it?
It's just really gotten much higher than I thought it would. Of course, a lot of it's, you know, tied to inflation, too. And of course, they fought the inflation off today because, you know, crude oil's down over $3 a barrel, but the grains went up. As they said on DTN, corn and beans were dragged up with the wheat. So, yeah, we had quite a reversal today. It was kind of nice to see.
All right. And what are your bids for the day?
All right. Our cash corn today is $3.85. Cash beans are $10.54. And new crop wheat is $6.43 today, Todd.
Thanks much for being with us.
Thank you.
Hey, Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find most of the daily ag programming, including the pre-opening, the opening, and the Closing Market Report, along with Sue Martin's Midday Report and Commodity Week, all as MP3 files. You can download them directly from the website, and four out of those five you can pick up as a podcast and have it delivered directly to your computer. It's all at willag.org. In 2 minutes, I'll return with a look at today's agricultural weather forecast, your regional newscast. Well, that one comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Lawmakers are back at the Illinois Capitol today, but a solution for mass transit and construction projects remains unclear. Governor Blagojevich called the legislature into special session. He wants them to approve a long-term funding solution for mass transit in the Chicago area. The House plans to vote later today on a proposal that would shift gasoline sales tax revenue to help fix the problem. But Senate President Emil Jones says its outlook isn't good. He says the Senate will have too many members gone today and tomorrow to approve the plan if the House passes it. He also says downstate senators are refusing to support mass transit help unless a deal for road and school construction projects across the state is also reached. Former Indiana Republican Party Chairman Al Hubbard is resigning as director of the National Economic Council. In a letter to the president, Hubbard said he's leaving the White House at the end of the year to spend more time with his children. Hubbard has helped direct White House policy on entitlement reform, energy security, and other issues. He was the Indiana Republican chairman from 1993 to 95. He has not yet announced his plans for the future. A pair of armed robberies last night in a Champaign apartment complex left one man injured. Police say the man suffered a non-life-threatening gunshot wound after he and a friend tried to keep two or three young men from robbing them in an apartment on Kyler Drive. Police say the same suspects may have also held up a man earlier in the same complex. Tonight's the first meeting of a panel charged with helping guide the Champaign School's long-range plan. The committee is the brainchild of two board members who say it will discuss long-term building needs, but not necessarily any future referendum for voters. The meeting is set for the Beckman Institute on the U of I campus at 7 o'clock. The cost of passing on may rise a bit in Champaign-Urbana. The city's public health district is considering a hike in the price of a death certificate. The interim director says it's confusing that the county and other outlying communities charge different fees for obtaining death certificates, which are usually handled by funeral homes. The CU Public Health District currently charges $7, while the county clerk's office charges $12. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
And I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL Urbana. We're joined on this Wednesday afternoon by Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather across the Midwest. Looks like things are in a pattern that is changeable by the hour sometimes.
It's that time of the year. Indeed, we are going to see a considerable amount of change coming up. As we go through the next several days, the weekend itself looks like it's going to be rather stormy across the heart of the Midwest. A lot of rain for the lower parts of the region and some very heavy snow will end up occurring across the upper portions of the region from South Dakota into upper Michigan. That region is likely to end up with 3 to 8 inches of snow accumulation and maybe something even greater than that. And a lot of blowing and drifting of snow expected on the backside of the storm system late Sunday. And for the lower parts of the Midwest, we're probably going to see rain totals run from a half inch to an inch and a half, and might end up with some localized flooding since the ground is already becoming saturated across a large part of the region with all the rain we've already seen. As far as hard red wheat country is concerned, we are going to see precipitation out there as well, but right now it does not look like the amounts of precipitation are going to be all that impressive. The southwest half of the region, including Texas and the southwest Oklahoma, probably won't get more than perhaps 3,500ths of an inch of moisture, and the northeast half of the wheat country will probably get up to 6,500ths. That's not enough to make a big difference, and I'm sure that the market's going to recognize that before long.
There were times earlier in the week where it was thought that Chicago, the Windy City, might have a pretty rough weekend this weekend. I ask because the Illinois Farm Bureau annual meeting is there on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Will they avoid the bulk of the snow in this latest run of cold weather?
It doesn't look like the Chicago area is going to get a lot of snow until the storm passes, so we'll get some wraparound snowfall on the back side of the system. But I don't think the accumulations are going to be all that great. Now, further north in central Wisconsin and back to the west out across Minnesota and parts of northeastern Iowa, yes, I think there'll be some pretty impressive snow accumulations in some of those areas. But I don't believe we're going to see a great deal of a problem for the Chicago area immediately there. I think pick up maybe a couple of inches of snow and a lot of wind and blowing snow maybe at the tail end of the system, but not before the storm actually passes through the region.
And finally, wrap things up by taking a look at the growing regions in South America.
Well, the situation right now in Argentina is still one that is quite tenuous. There's a large portion of Argentina that is turning quite dry. We're going to be very warm to hot for the next 2 or 3 days. And no precipitation of consequence. Now, during the weekend, there's a chance that parts of Argentina will end up with some locally heavy rainfall, and in particular, that will occur around the two driest provinces of Santiago del Estero and portions of Cordoba. Both those areas will end up with perhaps some localized rain amounts over an inch, but it's not going to be generalized enough, and that's going to leave a large part of Argentina still in need of greater amounts of rain. In Brazil, most of the country is in pretty good shape right now. We're drying down the south where it's been pretty wet recently, and the northeast it's getting rain where it's been dry. So this trend will continue for the next week I don't see any problems coming on for a while. Eventually, we'll need rain again in southern Brazil, but probably not for another week or so.
Drew, thanks much.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. You can pick up Drew's comments and those of Paul Cooley and most of the rest of the comments you've heard on the Daily Ag programming here at the radio station. It's all at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.